Everyone, and welcome to minute 162 of season 8 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we boobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Chris Henry of the Apollo 13 Minute. Welcome back to the show, Chris.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm having a great time with you here.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And enjoying myself here. All this talk about emotions of veterans is just great.
You know, it is, and it's something that, you know, for a long time they kept bottled up, and and they still do. I mean, that's something that even our current veterans are battling. But you know, the World War II guys, it was almost encouraged to bottle it up. You know, I mean, it was just that generation, that mindset. World War II was so huge that everybody had a World War II story. So the guys didn't want to be in any sort of spotlight really or anything. And, you know, they came home from the war and they just went back to their job as a mailman or whatever it was that they did. And they didn't talk about it. And it took until something, I really think this movie helped getting that pressure valve open and letting these guys talk about it. I really think this was, you know, World War II started to be talked about in a great big way again, because of this film.
Yeah, I think so. Again, it was at this time, you know, the late 90s, that's when, you know, even I think it was Tom Brokaw who coined them the Greatest Generation. And you know, the whole idea was that this was 55 years after everything happened, and people began to realize, wait a second, we got to start hearing these stories from these people. You know, we can't keep this all a secret, because pretty soon there's going to be no way of us getting this information. And
yeah,
you know, this movie is helpful from that perspective, because they are giving us information that you know, albeit it's a fictional story, but it is a story that could theoretically have happened. You know, it's not completely you know, it's not a story that you look at and you say, oh, this couldn't happen. You know, only in the movies could something like this happen. This was very realistic with the way that they present things here, and it's great.
Yeah, you know, when I first saw the movie, and then a few years went by and I'd seen Band of Brothers, I went back and I watched the movie again. And like for a brief second, I was kind of like, oh, you know what? Like, I liked Band of Brothers more because, of course, it's telling the story of very accurately of a unit in it that it really happened to. But then I realized that wasn't the intent on Saving Private Ryan. The intent on Saving Private Ryan was giving you a false story that was accurately told, that honored a wide array of World War II veterans. So everybody could identify themselves in some of the movie, or their loved one in some of the movie. And I think, and I'm like, oh, that was really clever to do it that way. You know, you're not talking about necessarily just the 506th or something like that. You're talking about, you know, a wider sort of, you're casting a larger net of like, this was World War II, you know? So you're able to kind of let more people see themselves or their loved ones kind of in some of these roles, which I thought was a smart way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because again, the idea for me, the best type of movies are the ones that can relate to as many people as possible.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and to take a story like this and find a way for it to relate to a larger gamut of people or spectrum of people is the goal. You know, obviously, I'm not going to belittle the idea that you know, they're in it to make money. But on the other hand,
right,
you know, in order to make money, you need to make it relatable. You need to make it something that people are going to look at it and say, wow, this really spoke to me. And
exactly.
You know, and that's the thing.
Well, and I think, you know, I think there's such a thing as you can make money and still care about your product, you know, be passionate about your product at the same time. So, you know, you're not going to be able to not make money you know, and still get the story told. You know, you're going to have to, you know, do that. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But you can tell that they could have made money. Let's put it this way. They could have made more money by not going and spending so much on details that they felt were important to get right in this movie that are in there. You know, they clearly could have had a bigger profit margin, but instead they went and found, you know, original pieces of hardware. There were times where original pieces of hardware were not in existence that were in operational condition, and they went and had it created, you know, where you could have easily just not done it. You know, you could have had the tank, you know, at the end get blown up with a grenade instead of P-51 Mustang. So now you had to pay for fuel and everything. I mean, totally, I don't know, totally, they went above and beyond, you know, and so they, you know, they did right by the story, by the veterans. And, you know, and in order to do that, you have to get it in front of enough people to show you, I've made a good product. You know, yes, I'm going to make money off this, but I've made a good product and it is going to do a good mission once I get it out there. And so I have no problems with how that all went down.
Yeah, no, not at all. Minute 162 begins with Ryan finishing his salute and ends with a fade to black. So we ended things yesterday with Ryan standing in front of the grave marker of Miller and saluting to the grave marker. And, you know, the camera then changed and it gave us a shot from behind. And the way that they do this here is just amazing because, you know, the camera then moves in closer to the level of the grave itself. And while it's doing that, if you look, you see just the rows and rows and rows of graves that are sitting here that are all, you know, in this spot. And it reaches a point where the camera does it that you don't see that, you know, that it's hard then to even count how many are there. It just makes it completely, you know, just a field of crosses, more or less. Just to let us get an idea of the scope and the amount. I mean, we talked at the beginning of this season about how many people are buried in the cemetery and stuff like that. But here, you know, we're just focusing on that one particular gravestone or grave marker. You know, and then the camera then focuses in on what's written on the marker itself. So we see John H. Miller, Captain, 2 Ranger BN Battalion, Pennsylvania, June 15th, 1944. I actually find it a little interesting, and you might know more about this being, because of your history. Don't you think they should have given a little bit more information on these grave headings, like when the person was born, perhaps? You know, just to let us know that, okay, this is a teenager. This is, you know, someone who's, I mean, in the novelization, I believe that Miller is supposed to be like 37. Like that,
right? Which would, by the way, have been an old man for the war.
Completely.
Yeah. And I don't know if that was a format. I will be bluntly honest, I don't know the answer to that. I know if you go to like Arlington, you know, which I was just at a couple weeks ago, totally different headstone setup, but they do give you the born and you know, deceased date. But I think here that's the format that they are in. And I don't know if it's just like a space thing. I think really what they were worried about most was you trying to make sure that you found them, which is why, you know, they'd rather put Pennsylvania on there, because chances are at that time period, now you go there, it's a lot different. You, like we were talking about the other day, if you're going to go over there and there's this person you want to find, you know, me or you or anybody who's going to do, you know, homework on the internet. Or back then, you know, that wasn't a thing. So you were hopefully trying to find your buddy, and you knew his name, and you knew what unit he was in, and he was from Pennsylvania. See, you probably didn't, you know, you probably didn't care when he was born, because that's not how you were going to find him. You know, I think that's, I'm guessing, but I'm thinking that that's what it was. It was more about making sure people could find their loved ones. Or they didn't know. They might not even have known their birthday. I don't know what the real answer is to that. It'd be interesting to find out, though.
Right, because I'm looking at it from the perspective of that, you know, this is where he's been interned. You know, this body has been interned, and it'll be here forever. You know, so at some point, people might be interested in knowing, you know, that little extra tidbit of information.
Yeah,
absolutely. It sort of surprises me. I mean, I don't go to cemeteries that often, but you know, the graves that I have seen usually do show both for that very purpose.
Yeah.
So then you know, okay, this person lived to X. You know, that type of, just to give you a little bit something, you know, one little thing extra about the whole thing. I don't know. It could just be a little pet peeve or whatever it is. I don't know.
And I just looked up, just out of curiosity, I looked up a quick image of a couple of the headstones there. And yeah, it's the same format. They do not give a birth date. They have, so the one that I'm looking at basically has the guy's name, unit, where he was from, and then the day they died is on there. And that's it.
Okay, we knew that they did try and do things as accurately here as possible. So it sort of makes sense.
Yeah. No, totally get it. Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, for them to have been as accurate as possible with that.
This would be a good question to ask you, and I don't know if you do, because you know, maybe this was covered on an earlier episode. I seem to remember an interview once where, this might sound silly if you've already covered it and someone knows, but I seem to remember an interview once where they chose the headstone, or the placement of the headstone, like, for a real reason. And I can't remember what that was. I'd love to go back and find that interview that I read or I saw somewhere once where, like, they were in they were shooting these scenes first, or early on, and they were kind of playing around with lighting and stuff. And I almost want to say that, like, the headstone they saw was that guy's last, was Miller's last name, and they just kind of made the character that. But I seem to remember something about that, but I'd have to go back and read up more and figure out what that was. But I'll report back to you. But I remember there's a story of why they chose, like, where they were.
Right. I don't remember if there's anything about that. No. Not.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find that interview or that write-up or whatever it was I was reading once about it. It was just really interesting. And it could have just simply been the placement of they picked where they were going to film or something like that. But there was something interesting I remember about, like, the area that they were in of the cemetery. So I'll try and find out what that was.
I don't recall hearing something else about that.
Yeah, I just don't remember what it was, and it's a long time ago. I mean, this was probably like right after the movie had come out. I was watching something about it, but so that's how far back I'm going. But I'll see if I can find what I saw and figure out what that was.
Right. I don't see anything even on IMDb about it. I didn't say anything on IMDb that mentions what you said. But if you do find that out, find what it is, I would definitely be interested in hearing what you have to say about it. Now, the interesting thing here is that, you know, now it tells us that Miller died on June 13th, which then gives, you know, only now, after, you know, 161 minutes of watching this movie, do we know how long it took for this entire movie to take, or the story to take place, you know, because obviously we know that on June 6th was the main battle, you know, when they're storming the beach, and then the following day on the 9th, it tells us that their journey starts on the 9th, you know, when Miller meets his commander, that gives him the orders of what he has to do. So what that basically means is that this whole story takes place over a period of 4 days, you know, from June 9th to June 13th, which there's a lot that goes on here during that amount of time. You know, no question about that.
Those are full days.
Very, very, very full days. No question about that. And then, at this point, the music gets a little louder as it's, it's showing the grave and the editing here basically, you know, has the shot changing, and you know, if you were to stop it while it's doing this, you know, if you pause it, you see that you see the waving American flag in the background, while you still can see Miller's name and gravestone in the foreground. You know, because that's the transition. Transitions between the two, and it's just done really, really well. Because it's not as if it's morphed. It's one sitting on top of the other, and then at a certain point, you know, the gravestone just fades out, and then we see the flag itself. But it's just very cool the way that they do that.
Yeah, this movie is so well put together. I mean, I would love to see like what wasn't put in the movie, you know, like that, like the stuff that ended up on the editing floor, because it's just like the perfect, I hate to say it this way, but it's like the perfect war movie, if that makes sense.
Right.
It leaves you walking away from the theater wanting to know more about what happened, you know, and what happened that night at dinner, as we talked about in the previous episode.
Right.
You know, that had to be an emotional dinner that night, wherever they went.
I mean, we know of some of the stuff that, I mean, we've talked over the period of this entire season of some of the stuff that was cut out. You know, there was the whole idea that they were driving, that they started off their journey in a Jeep, as opposed to walking, you know, about doing it just by foot. But that whole part was cut out, even though there's a little bit of a blooper where we did see them in driving away in the Jeep. But then nothing's ever explained about that. You know, it's something
interesting. I never thought about that. I just remember thinking when I first saw it, I was like, that must have been a long walk.
Well, the question is, how far is it from Normandy to the fake Rimmel? You know, that you should look at it from that perspective too.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. That's incredible.
Yeah. Really is.
I didn't know the Jeep. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I also love that, you know, you see it when I know we're going backwards here, I apologize, but
you're
talking about the Normandy
okay.
thing. I you know, you've seen Normandy, you've seen the beach landings depicted in other movies. I would argue none as real as this. But I also love that you see like D plus, you know, 3 or 4 or, you know, however many days we were talking there, 13 or whatever, because you see the beachhead, how it evolved. And I think that's kind of cool. You don't really ever get to see that in the movie, but I mean, it became quite an operation out there on the beaches, I think it's cool. You get to, you know, you kind of get to see that.
Correct. I mean, we do get to see when they're, you know, when they're leaving. So we see all the stuff on the beach. Yeah. Which is a great shot.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I think it's fantastic. I'm born and raised in Pittsburgh, it's not a famous thing that Pittsburgh did for the war effort, but Pittsburgh built the LSTs, the landing ship tanks, that deployed a lot of the LCVPs that were used on D-Day. So kind of a thing, the LST, which is not a very glamorous ship, but it holds a special place in the hearts of a lot of folks from Pittsburgh, because a lot of them were built there. So when you get to see the beachhead like that, it's just kind of like, ah, oh, that's cool. There's some hometown pride there.
Yeah, why not? I mean, the war effort was I guess the entire country took on the burden of it.
Oh yeah, I mean that. You know, and to be honest, you know, most of this stuff was built by women. You know, when you look at the aircraft, the tanks, the ships. You know, most of your able-bodied men were in the military off fighting, and it was up to the women to build it, the Rosie the Riveter. As you see in the beginning of the movie, there's a lot of women that are serving as typists and things like that. You know, it truly was an all-encompassing war. One of the facts that I always thought was interesting was, you know, at that time period, toys were still mainly made out of metal, and there were recycling bins around that kids could take their toys and donate them to the war effort so they could be recycled for war goods. And, you know, I always tell people, for us to try to imagine that today, and I always try to tell to younger people this, I'm like, could you imagine having to ration your screen time or your time with your Wi-Fi and things like that, or take your smart device and go get it recycled for the war effort. You know, everybody kind of looks at me silly, but I'm like, that's what they were doing. I mean, trying to relate that to how it would hit us today. That's what we're talking about. And that's how much, you know, people were involved in this war, and to them on the home front, that's how they were going to fight it. And, our Rosie the Riveters were able to just outproduce everybody. I always liked, we had a chance to meet a German tank commander once, and he was at the Air Force Museum when I was a volunteer there in Dayton. I came to visit, and he told us that I can't remember what tank he was on, but whatever German tank he was in, he said that it was as good as 10 American Shermans. And he said, but the Yanks always had 11. And I always thought that was great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I thought it was a great quote.
Well, for someone 40, 50 years afterwards to say that, it already says something too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the comment on the fact that we just always had, the upper hand with numbers as far as equipment and stuff. We entered a war late, but once we got into it, we certainly, put it all in, put all that we had into it. That's for sure.
Right. I think I read a quote once from Eisenhower about the fact that one of the reasons that we won was because we had so many, we just kept producing more and more stuff.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, Boeing aircraft alone, just this one airplane company and their one factory out in Seattle, was making 5 B-17s a day. Like, that's insane that one factory in one state making one product was able to make 5 heavy bombers a day. To me is astounding. I mean, that is absolutely insane. You could take any item and then find out, how quickly they were producing them, but that's impressive. And what always got me was how quickly our country turned peacetime production into wartime production, where you had Frigidaire, building combat gliders, and you had, Chrysler building Sherman tanks, and, Ford was building B-24 bombers and things like that. And, General Motors was building torpedo bombers. All that stuff just really amazed me how how quickly our country, turned from making refrigerators to tanks. I thought that was, I would love to read a book just on that. Like, that had to be pretty wild.
Well, again, it does make sense. The idea that, okay, we now need to change the direction that we're going in. And
yeah, you're still going to rivet, but you're going to rivet something different.
That's right. That's right. Wow. We see this flag now. Do you recognize what flag this is? I mean, obviously we talked about it at the very beginning of the movie, but do you think this is a flag from 1997 or a flag from 1944?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And do you know the difference?
I assume that it is a current day flag at the cemetery. But I'm assuming. So I don't know the correct answer to that. I'm taking a wild guess.
Well, again, one of the things you have to think about is the fact that we never see where this flag is. It's not as if it's flying in on a pole somewhere.
Right. Right. Yeah, you're right. I actually had assumed that it was at the cemetery, but you're absolutely right. You don't see where it is. It's just a waving flag. So it could have easily been a 48 state flag. You're right.
But if you look at it, you can tell that it's got 50. So it is a modern modern one. Yeah. But it's still cool to think about the idea that, because it's transposed on, the grave marker. So are we, is this now or then and stuff like that? So
Yeah. That's a good, I never thought of that.
Isn't that why I'm here, Chris, to make you think about things that you never thought about?
You always push me.
But I hope it's in a good way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I always enjoy doing these.
Okay. And that's basically all I have to say about this, man. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think that it it ends in a very poignant way. Like you said, it's a great shot, and it does give you a hint of just how big World War II was, how many people passed, and really, each of these stones that you're looking at, each of these headstones could have a movie treatment the same way as this one did. I mean, so think of that, you know, there's a lot of untold stories from World War II yet. Yeah, no, it's a great minute. As I have all week, I encourage you, go get involved in your local museum. Your life will never be the same. I guarantee you, you'll enjoy it. So, if there's a local museum out there near you, please get involved with it.
And so every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg directed films.
Oh,
So
okay. Interesting.
once again, why don't you start with number five and work your way up?
You know what? I'm gonna go with I gotta go. I gotta put Jaws on the list. It even though it made me not want to go into the ocean for quite a while when I was young, it's a cool movie. I would watch it even if it's just for the USS Indianapolis speech.
Oh
I
yeah.
mean, that alone was you believe that he was there, you know. I mean, it's so well done. So there's number five. Number four, I have to go with Empire of the Sun. Love that movie. I'm a P-51 geek, so having a young Christian Bale yell P-51 Cadillac of the Sky on the top of a building always you know, enthralled me. But really, it's a good movie. It's a tough movie to watch, but it's a very well done movie. And I love, there's just, it's a kid, you know, who loves aviation, which I've identified with that character a lot as a kid. So that would be my number four. My number three, kind of a deeper cut for some people, I think, but it's a movie called Always. Loved Always.
What a surprise.
I know, I know. I wonder if this was on Hal's list too, if Hal did this.
I believe it was. I will tell you in a second. I do believe it was, though.
I would guess.
Yes, it was actually number one on House
Oh,
List.
that's awesome. Yeah. So Always is up there, which is a remake of the old movie, A Guy Named Joe.
Yes.
And I actually, they came up.
I actually like A Guy Named Joe better than more than
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Oh, yeah. Guy Named Joe's a great movie. So interestingly enough, they decided to do Always while they were filming Jaws. They kept talking about a guy named Joe while they were filming Jaws, and they decided to do a remake. So that's number
Well,
three.
took them, what was it, 13 years to 14. Always came out in 89, I believe. So it took them 14 years after making Jaws to
Oh
do that.
yeah, that did. It took a while. I love it. And it also, like, on a very slim note, I mean, it's about a lot of stuff, but you don't really get to see the guys who are out flying forest fire missions a lot, and they certainly don't get the spotlight a lot, but that takes a lot of bravery to do that. So I always thought that was, you know, that was pretty cool.
Okay.
So I could easily go down like the Indiana Jones path, because I love those movies. However, I'm gonna go a different direction, and I'm gonna go with The Terminal. Love that movie. You know, I don't know. I can't explain it. I always thought it was a great movie. I enjoyed it. So I'm gonna go with that. And of course, number one, got to go with the movie we're talking about, Saving Private Ryan. It is, you know, just such a wonderful. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. So, yeah, it would be weird if I didn't name that right somewhere in our top five.
You don't need to. Again, Steven Spielberg's credit list is so deep
Yeah.
that, okay, five, trying to decide what five you like the best is not simple. I'm aware of
I'm gonna
that.
throw you a different. I'm gonna throw you a
And
different one. I'm a kid of the 80s.
there are people who didn't have Saving Private Ryan on their list. It does
Yeah, no. I'm gonna throw you an opposite one. I'm gonna
happen.
tell you, I'm a kid of the 80s. I'm gonna tell you one that I didn't like, and that is E.T. I never liked E.T. I don't know why, but
Really?
never got it. Yeah,
Interesting.
never got into that movie. And that was a huge movie when I was a kid. I mean, and there was E.T. everything and Reese's Pieces and all that stuff. And
Yeah, of course.
never.
I even remember seeing E.T. in the theater as a, let's see, it came out in 82, so I was 8,
Yeah. That was such a huge thing, and I don't know. I just never got into that one, but I've loved the others, and there's so many more. I mean, even more recent ones like Ready Player One. I love that. I mean, he does such great work.
Yes, that is true. All right. So, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Chris Henry?
Absolutely. So you can find me on several of the minutes here helping out. I've also been part of the Apollo 13 minute, which was wonderful fun with Jim O'Kane. I've been on things like the Die Hard minute and the MASH minute. But my everyday job day to day is I'm the manager of the EAA Aviation Museum here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So hope you get to come out and visit us. And if you do, please come out, say hi. Let me know you're coming ahead of time, and would love to meet up and say hi.
Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, Chris, you feel like coming back in tomorrow for a special Saturday episode?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm having so much fun, and it's such an honor to talk about this. I'd be happy to.
All right, excellent. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude.